This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires.
Welcome back to Maggie and the Millionaires Talk Money. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It is the 3 o'clock block, and that means it is time to talk money. My next guest, her name is Maureen Kennedy. She is a philanthropist focused on tax policy and K-12 education. She is the former assistant secretary for policy at the Department of Housing and Urban Development from the Clinton administration. Welcome, Maureen. I'm so glad you could make time for us. You yourself are a patriotic millionaires, a patriotic millionaire. And you've talked a lot with your friends about the PMs. You've talked a lot with your friends about tax policy, about education policy. Why did you join the PMs, and why do your other friends in a similar financial situation feel about being part of the PMs?
You know, I don't have a lot of other friends who are in this similar situation, I must say. But I first came across the Patriotic Millionaires on Facebook. I had a friend in the neighborhood who I didn't know anything in particular about their financial situation. And he talked a little bit about what was going on with Patriotic Millionaires. Maybe it was April 15th when we do a lot of stuff. And I just thought, you know, I love taxes and I love policy. This is an organization I should be checking out and getting a better handle on. And it's just, they're super smart people, and our interests and perspectives on tax policy are just really aligned.
Yeah, I think, you know, I often say, and I've said during this segment frequently, if you care about child care policy, you care about tax policy. If you care about working families, you care about tax policy. If you want to see stronger border security, you care about tax policy. So let's jump in. Let's talk first about the minimum wage. Trump has refused to support raising the federal minimum wage. It is a poverty level. It is $7.25 an hour. That is the federal minimum wage that applies in the state of Wisconsin. We haven't raised it here. Why is this important? Why is raising the minimum wage good for business and good for middle-class Americans?
Well, it's good for middle-class Americans. Let's talk about that for just a minute. As you say, it hasn't been raised since 2009, when, you know, I'm 66. I'm going to tell you guys a lot of very transparent stuff about me. I'm 66. Back in the day, I worked at McDonald's when I was 17. Truly, it was never on my resume. And I made $2.95 an hour. And I was in high school at the time. I didn't have two or three kids to support. These days, a lot of folks who work at McDonald's who are getting the minimum wage do have two or three kids, and they are very likely to be women. The people who are most affected by not increasing the minimum wage are going to be moms and moms with children. And it is outrageous to me that we're in a society where we feel like it's okay to make those least able to bear the brunt of our bad policy bear it. So that's my view on that.
Yeah, it's incredible to me that we have to have a discussion about the minimum wage. It hasn't been raised since 2009. I don't know why we don't index the minimum wage to inflation, to the consumer price index. In other words, so that it has a normal, reasonable cost of living adjustment. Republicans have stood in the way of that sort of reform, both here in the state of Wisconsin and in federal government. When we just sort of zoom out at a 10,000 foot level, from your perspective, you are well-to-do. You have a retirement that you can rely upon. Do you think that government is doing what it should be for working people in this country?
It can be doing It can be working for working people in a couple of different ways. Things like defending unions and people's ability to advocate for their own interests, right? And we are not as strong on that as we should be, I think. It can be doing things like making sure that the earned income tax credit, which I assume you guys talk about from time to time,
yes,
is working well and is at the right number and so on and so forth. It can also do things like invent the internet or really contribute to AI. So there are lots of ways that the government kind of gets involved with these things. My perspective is that the things that matter the most to working people are the least likely to have been supported through time. There's a guy, I don't know if you listened to the Pivot podcast with Kara Swisher and Scott Galloway. Scott is a maniac on the issue of the minimum wage. His view is that if you wanted to improve outcomes, but also welfare policy in this country, there's no better way to do it than to increase the minimum wage. Because basically at that point, you've got, you know, everybody has to comply. You can't get around it. But more importantly, you're in a situation where people are getting paid a wage that is responsible and it, you know, respects the work that they do and so on and so forth. You're not saying to them, oh, go work at Walmart and then go on welfare to kind of cover your gaps or go down to the food pantry to pick up extra food every week. You know, that is not a living wage. That's not the way this thing is supposed to work.
Well, it's incredibly two-faced, if I can put it in this way, for mm-hmm. conservatives to beat on the battle drum of bootstraps, right, and the value of hard work when they refuse to pay people a living wage for hard work. I mean, a fundamental starting point of discussion that I've often shared with various friends of mine is, listen, we agree that hard work is the backbone of the middle class. It drives our economy. We rely on middle class and working people in this country. If we agree that if someone's willing to work 40 or 50 hard hours, mm-hmm. decent, respectable hours of work, they should be able to live on that. There should be a dignity wage. We can actually figure out how much that costs in various areas of this country. And with some variation, it's de minimis. It basically requires a $20 an hour minimum wage.
Yep.
That is what mm-hmm. it requires. And we are so far from that. So it is not, in my opinion, and I'd love to hear yours, it's not a reasonable position to say we're a bootstrap place and we believe in meritocracy, but we will only guarantee an hourly wage at $7 and a quarter.
Right. And I think this is a real generational shift. Again, not to obsess about baby boomers and so on, but back in the day, you made an income. Let me make sure I can. You made an income. It increased over time. Your housing costs were relatively modest. Your health insurance costs were relatively modest. Your expenses for getting a college education were relatively modest. In California, you could get by with paying, you know, $2,000 a year maximum if you're an in-state student. Now, your income is, as you guys probably talk about all the time, basically flat since 1979, but housing costs have gone through the roof. Healthcare costs have gone through the roof. Education costs have gone through the roof. Healthcare costs have gone through the roof. Why do we think that somehow working class people are not working hard enough if they can't solve that equation, right? It's just crazy to think that you can somehow, especially somehow solve that problem without turning to the government and saying, hey, you guys need to kick in money for my childcare. You need to kick in money to subsidize my earned income. And this is, of course, assuming that you're actually working, because there are plenty of people who can't work for a variety of reasons, either because of health issues, disability issues, they've got very small children, all kinds of situations.
And to me, when you talk about minimum wage and fair wages, it also requires a discussion of tax policy, because to me, one of the most overwhelming level ups that we could do for the middle class and working people in this country is not only that $20 an hour minimum wage, but to say if you're only making $40,000, $41,000 as a household or less, we're not going to place a federal income tax on that because you are barely scraping by. We can shift that tax burden to the people that have more than enough to live and get by and thrive and buy the second and third homes and boats and lots of cars and things. Mm-hmm. Talk mm-hmm. to me about tax policy. How biased is the tax code, Maureen?
Well, a couple different things, but let me make one really quick point on this. We have, as you know, in 2025, this once in more or less a decade moment to kind of get the tax system in better shape.
Yes.
The current tax arrangement that we've got dates from 2017. They basically locked it in for 8 years all the way to 2025. And so if we don't get this done in the next year, we're kind of locked in for another 10 years. The tax, and as we all know, in 2017, what the Trump administration did was it torqued the tax arrangement so that it benefited higher income people. I used to be one of those high income people, okay? I have a lot of assets right now, but I'm retired, so I don't have the income that I used to have. But until I quit working, coincidentally about 3 months before COVID hit, I was paying 50% as my marginal tax rate. And that was completely fair because I was making a lot of money. And, you know, the federal tax rate at the time was 39%, and we all paid it, right? This is not new. We all paid, all of us who were making that income all paid 39%. It's not like somehow, everybody deserves to be paying 37%. We were all paying 39%. And then I was paying 10% basically for California state tax, 2.8% on top of that for a millionaire's tax. So 50%. And now my tax rate has gone down quite a bit because of the Trump tax adjustments and a bunch of other stuff that has happened in the meanwhile, some COVID benefits and so on.
So if I can just jump in here, because we're going to have to take care of a couple of messages here. What I hear you saying, Maureen, is before you were paying a much higher effective overall tax rate, not just on a marginal basis for, you know, income dollars earned over X and Y and Z. And now because of the Trump tax cuts, you pay much less. You believe your position is you should be paying more. Other people in your position, other millionaires that belong to the Patriotic Millionaires that have been guests on this show, believe they should be paying more because it works to support the middle class. We're going to talk about why we tax work differently than wealth, right? Wealth, a dollar earned from wealth gets taxed at a much lower rate than a dollar earned from work. We'll talk about that, the difference between capital gains and income taxes, when we come back on today's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talk Money with our special guest, Maureen Kennedy, a philanthropist and former assistant secretary for HUD in the Clinton administration. We'll be right back here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
And the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of Civic Media and the Patriotic Millionaires. For more information, go to patrioticmillionaires.org and be sure to tell your friends. The Patriotic Millionaires buy advertising across a number of Civic Media stations.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're in the 3 o'clock hour, so it means we're talking money. Today, our special guest is Maureen Kennedy. She is a patriotic millionaire. She was also assistant secretary for policy at HUD during the Clinton administration. Welcome back, Maureen. I want to talk about the differences between income tax and capital gains tax. Can you explain it? And then can you explain or express your opinion? Is it fair that a dollar earned from wealth is taxed at a much lower rate than a dollar earned from work? Because it's one of the mysteries of the universe that I can't quite square.
I will get to that in 1 second. Let me just follow up on something you said earlier. People like me believe that we can pay higher taxes and that we should. I think there's a bunch of other people who think that they can or know that they can do it, but they think, I don't have to, I don't want to, I just won't do it. So I think that's a big distinction here. So capital gains versus, so people, you know, there's the whole arrangement that everything's divided between labor and capital, right? Labor and machines, labor and stuff other than a working person using their body to get stuff done. As a result of that, we've always had an arrangement where you're taxed for your labor, and there's a different arrangement for the way that you're taxed for everything else. Tax rate on labor right now goes up as high as 37%. Tax on everything else is only 20%. So I'm in this fabulous situation where I'm no longer working. That means I'm not paying 37% for that marginal chunk of the money that I'm making any given day. I could be making the exact same amount of money on an annual basis, but make it off of my stocks and bonds, which is basically exactly what I'm doing. That's the capital part or the business part of my financial picture. I could be making $500,000 in cash from my job, or $500,000 from the money that I have in my Schwab account. And right now I'm paying 40% of what I was paying when I was working. So my tax bill is 40%, 60% lower than it was, just because I happen to be getting that income from my stocks and bonds. So you can imagine that for people like Musk and Bezos and all those guys, they're, in many cases, they actually are working for $0 or $1 a year. They're getting lots of stock options and other kinds of benefits like that. And that's why they're only paying a maximum of 20%, and then they can do a bunch of shenanigans to get the number down even lower.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible to me that certainly it sounded innocuous back when stock options became a huge part of executive compensation. Like, oh, that seems reasonable, but it created basically a very short-term reward horizons for CEO, big incentives to sort of juice numbers to hit sometimes what are artificial metrics. And of course, it allowed the richest workers in the United States, the CEO class, to avoid paying their fair share in income taxes because they just sit on the stock. And if you never sell it, you never actually realize the gain. You don't pay anything. You pass it along and everybody gets away literally tax scot-free, right? I wanted to
add, you're just getting the dividends.
Yes, just the dividends. Thanks much. I wanted to also ask you about somebody who's got a 401k, right? And many, if you're lucky enough as a worker, you've got a 401k. What do you think about, you know, how that fits into the mix? Because I've had people ask me about that. And generally speaking, Marie, my answer has been, listen, those of us with the drippings from the table, yes, it's good when the corporate profits are up and those things are happening, but we are a tiny, tiny, tiny little fraction of those who actually own shares. Can you speak to this issue a little bit?
Absolutely. Somewhere recently, I saw that the average worker in the U.S. has like $25,000 or $30,000 in their retirement account, whatever that might be, their IRA. In my case, it's an IRA or a 401k or a 403b if you work in the nonprofit world. And that is not enough to retire on. Obviously, we used to have pensions. We don't have pensions anymore because, you know, corporate America thought that was tough and inconvenient for them to have these long-term obligations to retirees into the future. So they said, let's just pay out a little bit now in a matching arrangement into the 401k accounts. I think 401ks are great. You still have to pay taxes on it, right? At some point you're going to retire, you're going to start taking money out of that, and you're going to pay taxes on it. So while it's tax-free or tax-deferred now when you're putting money into it, you know, the federal government makes absolutely sure that eventually you're going to have to pay taxes on it. Rich people don't ever have to take money out of their 401ks, right? They can borrow against it and and in some cases even write off the interest that they're paying as they get a loan against their 401ks. And then they pass it on to their heirs. And unfortunately for all of us, when they do that, there's no tax paid, you know, either, because it just becomes part of their estate.
If you've got, I mean, to summarize here, one, those of us with 401ks, we're very lucky, but we're a very small sliver of actually who owns stock in this country. Two, we end up paying tax on that because we have to live off our 401ks or our IRAs in retirement. Rich folks, they're not using those tools. They're using tools that allow them to avoid potentially paying any tax at all on it. Closing thoughts, Marie, what do you want an average working person here in the state of Wisconsin that might lean a little conservative, you know, that generally thinks, oh, we don't need to raise the minimum wage, tax policy's fine. Tell them in a minute, Marie, what they should know. Less than that, 30 seconds, friend.
Two quick things. One is, because I have my housing background, depreciation is a really big scam.
Yes. So
basically, it's the federal government saying, we think that your house is going to be losing value in the coming years when your investment property, when in fact, we all invest in it precisely because we know it's increasing in value. And so that just doesn't make sense. We're all not in the position to be making so much money that we don't have to pay taxes.
Thanks so much, folks. That's Maureen Kennedy, a philanthropist and a patriotic millionaire, who joined me today for today's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talk Money. Thanks so much, Maureen. We're going to come back with our next guest, Melinda Brennan, executive director at the ACLU of Wisconsin. We're going to talk about reproductive access. We're going to talk about housing. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of different things when we return after these brief messages here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Get out and vote, Wisconsin.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Oh, what's up, Wisconsin and beyond? Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've had quite a busy day, all lumps and bumps. Part of the fun, you can always, or at least usually, find us on the Civic Media app and on YouTube, of course, the Civic Media YouTube channel. And you can find me at Maggie Dawn Show on the Twit, on the Insta and the Facebook. My thanks to Charles Franklin, who we started the day with, talking about the new poll. It's basically all tied up here in Wisco, folks. Tammy Baldwin nosing ahead of Eric Hovde. My thanks to David Marsteller, candidate for the 21st Assembly District. And of course, Sarah Spain from Emily's List for Sounds Like Change. And as well, Maureen Kennedy, one of the patriotic millionaires for today's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. We got some feedback from my discussion with Sarah Spain today, which I wanted to share with you all as we await our very next guest's arrival. We're hoping to hear yet this afternoon from Melinda Brennan, executive director at the ACLU of Wisconsin. After my discussion with Sarah Spain today about respecting families and women's right to choose healthcare for themselves, a very irate listener called up one of the Civic Media studios and expressed their rage at the fact that Democrats are, according to this listener, flipping our position about government being involved in healthcare decisions and lambasting Democrats for having advocated for COVID shots and for schools requiring COVID vaccinations for kids to go back to school. Here's what. Let's first observe this point. If this is your perspective, well, I get to decide that I don't want a COVID shot, then why the heck are you telling women about whether or not they get to do what they want with their bodies? Why are you telling families what is and is not appropriate healthcare for their children? Right? Like that question about your flip-flop, that's hypocritical, goes right back to the conservative. So that's thing one. Thing two is this, and it's pretty basic. Public health outcomes. What creates greater overall wellness for communities, states, and our countries? Okay? I'm going to put that out there as one barometer by which these are completely consistent positions. COVID vaccines advocated by the government, not mandated, by the way. Now, you had to have one to do certain things. But hey, you could make a choice. Not the government didn't force you to get a COVID vaccine. The government is forcing women to have babies. Okay? We know of at least 25,000 pregnancies in the state of Wisconsin post-Roe that were the result of rape, women being forced to have babies. So the government didn't force you to get a COVID vaccine. If you chose not to get one, then there were some consequences to those choices. That's usually an acceptable thing for conservatives. But let me return to public health. Here's what we know. Here's what the statistics are bearing out about abortion. Post-Roe, maternal mortality is up. Infant mortality is up. And there are now more abortions in states with bans than there were before. So it's not working from a public health perspective to ban abortion. Guess what makes public health better when it came to COVID? Lots of people getting COVID vaccines. Pretty basic. That's the barometer. It's the best thinking that we've got on public health. And it's, oh, by the way, what the data, what the science is bearing out. More women die, more babies die, and there are more abortions when you put in place these draconian bans. Bad for public health. What is also bad for public health? A bunch of people thinking that COVID vaccines aren't a good idea. That makes it more likely that elderly folks and folks with that are immunocompromised get sick and die from COVID, or at least are hospitalized. Right now, the cohort, the demographic that has the greatest hospitalization and death rate from COVID are elderly folks. There are who is in the hospital. But I can make a third argument for you. When you choose not to get a COVID vaccine, you put me at risk. Right? When you choose not to get a COVID vaccine, that means maybe me or my elderly parents are more likely to die because you're a walking transmitter of COVID because you didn't get a vaccine. So you're putting other people's health at risk. When people talk to me about COVID vaccines, I'm like, do you think we should go back to smoking inside? Do you believe in smoking bans? That's the difference. When I choose to get an abortion before fetal viability, that has nothing to do with anybody but me. So, sir, that called up very angry, stop it, because I don't get it. I do not get it. I see we've got our friend Greg from Waukesha on the line. Greg, what do you have to say this afternoon, sir?
Hello, Maggie. I can't hear you, but hopefully you can hear me. I cannot hear you on the phone at all after you putting me in hold, but after the producer putting me in hold. But anyway, the point I wanted to make, and I guess I'll listen off air, is that, a lot of people say about the abortion thing, but there's always adoption. Well, I'm sorry. Adoption is going to flood our adoption system. We know that there's a lot of paperwork you know, associated with adoption, and it's just not going to be a great idea.
Yeah, it's not a viable option at all, Greg. Thank you so much for the call. I'm going to jump in and just say this. Adoption is extraordinarily expensive. It is also an entirely unregulated system. We don't have federal laws governing how adoption works. We don't. Scary, right? There aren't enough families to adopt all of the babies. And it also presumes, like, well, if you would have gotten an abortion, but a state forces you to have the baby, that you, of course, want to give the baby up. That's ridiculous, right? That's ridiculous. It's just such a limited response to where we are. I wanted to play a little sound because over the last couple of days, just some incredibly insensitive things have been said. And I thought it was really interesting. The former GOP candidate for president, Nikki Haley, had some pretty emphatic things to say about the tone that Donald Trump and a lot of these speakers at Madison Square Garden have taken with respect to how they speak to women, how they speak about women, and how they speak about people of color. Let's take a listen. This is Nikki Haley.
Were right to denounce the comedian. They need to go and tell Puerto Ricans how much, you know, they do value them. They need to tell Latinos that, but they also need to look at how they're talking about women. I mean, this bromance and this masculinity stuff, I mean, it borders on edgy to the point that it's going to make women uncomfortable. You know, you've got affiliated PACs that are doing commercials about calling Kamala the C word, or you had speakers at Madison Square Gardens, you know, referring to her and her pimps. That is not the way to win women. That is not the way to win people who are concerned about Trump style. This is a time to talk about the economy. This is the time to talk about immigration. This is the time to talk about national security. And this is the time to talk about Kamala Harris. They were right to denounce the comedian. They need to go and tell Puerto Ricans how much.
She goes on. Why is this okay? And yet you can't. She's one of the only conservatives I've heard basically denounce the comic, say this is unacceptable. And here's what. I'm not even going to get into the fact that Joe Biden, sort of in passing, and he ain't the candidate, used the word garbage. Donald Trump has called our entire country garbage. Stop holding Kamala Harris accountable for what Joe Biden said. Stop holding Kamala Harris, and even if you want, Joe Biden, to a different standard than you apply to your own candidate. Joe Biden shouldn't have said that. Kamala Harris has had basically immediately disowned and walked away from the comment by Joe Biden. Why can't Republicans at least accept a responsibility to be decent? A fundamental level of decency. It's real simple. Please stop treating other Americans like crap. Stop talking about us like we don't matter. Stop talking about you like you don't matter. It's just, it's too much. I've had it. But let's see what David from San Francisco has to say. David, what do you have to say this afternoon?
Oh, thanks, Maggie. I was going to raise the fact that Donald Trump is a realtor or, you know, a developer. And he knows, and he's known long before, you know, years ago when his father was a developer, that the best way to get land is in an epidemic. And when you make COVID go bad, you force people into high medical bills, and they're forced to sell their land. And you get into whether or not he wants to do deportations of millions of people. How many of those millions of people would lose their land? You rush them out of the country before they can even pay their taxes. If they own their houses, if they own their back 40, if they own any land, that land goes up for grabs and it goes up as tax auction.
Yeah.
So just think of Donald Trump as organized crime. And seriously, have you seen the movie The Apprentice?
No, I haven't yet, David, just because I'm angry enough on a day-over-day basis, my friend. I'm saving that one to after November 5th to keep my hair from lighting on fire, which is usually a daily occurrence, and my blood from actually boiling. Thanks so much, David from San Francisco. Appreciate you listening and calling, sir. Let's take a little bit more sound, because this was a hard pill to swallow. This is going to be cut 18. This is Tucker Carlson at the Madison Square Garden rally. And we're going to go right from cut 18 right into cut 19. Because the two of these together just left me scratching my head. Let's take a listen.
And the second reason that people love Trump, and I put myself in this category, it's why I'm here today, is because he's liberated us in the deepest and truest sense. And the liberation he has brought to us is the liberation from the obligation to tell lies. You look at Liz Cheney and you ask yourself, honestly, what skill could she possibly have that allowed her to send hundreds of thousands of people to their deaths? Did she earn that? I don't think she did.
What? So just to recap here, Donald Trump is the liberator from lies? No. He's the most prolific liar in modern political history. And then Tucker goes on to lie about Liz Cheney. Like, what? What? It's just so incredible. And unless, I mean, let's be sure, if you have any doubt about whose liberation they care about, it's the liberation of white Christian nationalist landowning men with over, you know, like 20 million in assets in total, heads of households. Right, that believe like they do, that vote like they do, and want the same things that they do. That ain't American at all. When we come back, we're going to listen to a guy that actually tells us exactly what they where they want to take us. Back. Very, very, very far, far back. Can we... I'm going to hold it. When we come back, we're going to take a listen to someone telling us exactly what time frame in our country they want to take us back to. We'll listen to some more Tucker. He talking about spanking? We might even get in a little housing and immigration policy. All things are possible here on The Maggie Dawn Show. Your calls and texts are welcome as we close out this Wednesday episode. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Might even give you a couple of tips about what to do with your absentee ballot if you haven't gotten it in the mail yet. Don't mail it. Might not get there in time. In Wisconsin, they got to be received by Election Day. I'll start there because that's the PSA for today. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You want to get in your two cents? I had a guy just text me and tell me I sound like Daffy Duck. Thank you. I can't do Daffy Duck perfect. No, it's not going to work. That's more like I've got braces. Braces. I have braces. No, I can't do Daffy Duck, but thank you for your feedback. I appreciate it. If you want to get your two cents, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I promised I would start with... the tips on how to turn your absentee ballot in if you have not yet voted or dropped it in the mail. So you got an absentee ballot. You got your ballot all filled out. You got your envelope. It's been perfectly filled out. It's been witnessed. You got all your address information in there. You've double checked it. You've triple checked it. Excellent. But you haven't mailed it yet. Here's my advice. Don't mail it. In the state of Wisconsin, your jurisdiction needs to receive your ballot before November 5th, before end of business on November 5th. So I suggest not mailing it in. So here's what you can do to return your absentee ballot that you've received in the mail. You could take it to your specific polling place on Election Day. You can take it on Election Day to your community's central count location, or you can take it to your community's central count location now. Before Election Day, You can place it in an authorized drop box. You can drop it off at your election clerk's office, or you can bring it to an early voting location. But on election day, you either have to take it to your polling place, take it to your community central count, or it's got to go to your clerk's office. So those are that's my little PSA for the day. Couple more sounds. This guy's name is Howard Lutnick. He runs Cantor Fitzgerald. This is going to be cut number 29 because he tells us exactly where we want to take our country back to. Let's take a little listen.
We all say, make America great again. But let's just go over for a minute what that means. Because we all say it as a slogan. When was America great? At the turn of the century, our economy was rocking. This is 1900, 125 years ago. We had no income tax. And all we had was tariffs.
Okay. So if you've missed my numerous shows on this very concept, probably the best one to catch is my last interview with Heather Cox Richardson. So if you remember the turn of the century when we were going from the late 1800s into the 1900s and then what transpired after that, let me just summarize what Harold Lutnick, CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald, is talking about. When we had all tariffs, guess what it created? It created the robber barons, the Gilded Age. This was the time of the Astors, the Vanderbilts, the Rockefellers, when monopolies and massive trusts owned everything. It is what created the Great Freaking Depression. Our country made a determination that tariffs only work to create monopolies which exploit workers and the middle class. And we moved away from them as a revenue generating mechanism to a progressive income tax where the wealthy and corporations should pay their fair share. Well, we've gone away from that. Donald Trump and guys like Harold Lutnick, a CEO, that's the kind of time they want to take us back to, the Gilded Age, where the richest among us paid the very least, and us working folks were taken for chumps and suckers and losers. That's where they want to take us back to. Period. Full stop. Oh, and you know, to do that, get rid of things like the ACA. Let's take a listen to Mike Johnson saying exactly that. This is going to be cut number 36. It's the pink one on the very bottom. It says Mike Johnson, Speaker Mike Johnson, talking about caught on a hot mic, didn't know he was being recorded, telling everybody, oh yeah, we got a plan to corporatize healthcare and get rid of the ACA. Let's take a listen.
There's a lot of talk. I mean, healthcare reform is going to be a big part of the agenda. When I say we're going to have a very aggressive first 100 days agenda, we got a lot of things though on the table.
But healthcare, a lot of things.
It's the secret. Healthcare reform is not a secret. There's some really important ideas on the table. And we have a docs caucus, the physicians who serve in the House, and they've got a menu of options about this thick. And I think this is part of it, because if you take government bureaucrats out of the healthcare equation and you have doctor-patient relationships, it's better for everybody, more efficient, more effective. That's the free market. Trump's going to be for the free market. You heard a little sample of that last night. We want to take a blowtorch to the regulatory state, okay? Yeah. I mean, these agencies have been weaponized against the people. And yeah. It's crushing the free market. It's like a boot on the neck of job creators and entrepreneurs.
Okay, we'll wrap it up. So just to recap, let's stop the government from negotiating prescription drug prices. Let's stop the government from requiring healthcare companies and insurance companies to cover pre-existing conditions. Let's just go back to the Wild West, because that was working so well for each and every one of us. What an abomination. I mean, what? Geez, you have a doctor caucus in Congress. That's great, Mike Johnson. Hey, what's your plan to replace the ACA? Oh, wait, I forgot. It's concepts of a plan. Absolutely ridiculous. We deserve better. Remember, follow the money, because it will take you to the solution. And the proposal from Trump and Mike Johnson and the rest of them is more handouts for the wealthiest and screw you, the middle class and working class Americans. Dom Salvio's up next. Keep it locked here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.